From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells. Now we're welcome back to the show, senior editor at Scientific American, Tanya Lewis, who joins us for an update on COVID, specifically a recent article that she wrote. We've all been surprised by the unforeseeable consequences of COVID, and while some predicted that being at home under lockdown last year would create a spike in the birth rate, what has happened is the opposite. Tanya Lewis joins us to talk about this article, and also boosters, new variants, and breakthrough cases. Tanya Lewis, welcome back to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks so much. It's always great to be with you.
It's always good to have you on the program. This is it's just been fascinating the last year and a half, and it's always good to talk to you to get your updates, and you've been very focused on all this, and we very much appreciate it. Yesterday, 160,099 new cases in our country, and one in four of those were kids. And I just looked on the CDC last night, and most new cases per 100,000 people, approximately 1,000 new cases per 100,000 people, were in the five states, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And the least new cases per 100,000, approximately 125 new cases per 100,000, occurred in Connecticut, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, and New Jersey. It's so easy for someone to slam me right now and say that I'm being political, but this is data, and so we're here to talk about actual data. In the instances where the most new cases occurred, 54% of those, 72% of those were vaccinated. The least per 100,000 cases, only 54% vaccinated. So going back and forth with masks and looking at the vaccinated number, it still seems clear to me that vaccinations are important. First of all, did I misrepresent any of the data that I just mentioned?
No, I think you did a great job of summarizing where we're at in the pandemic. And you're absolutely right that the states that are seeing the worst surges right now are places where they have the lowest vaccination rates. And that's not an accident. We've known for some time now that these vaccines are incredibly effective. And they really are our best shot at ending this pandemic. So these patterns that we're seeing are tragic, but they're, you know, in some ways not surprising. And hopefully, if anything, it'll motivate some more people to get that vaccine.
Well, kids are going back to school. There's a lot of controversy on mask versus not mask. I heard a number yesterday, I think it was from the CDC, that said that 66% of No, it wasn't the CDC. It was some other study. 66% of parents that have kids going back to school would prefer to see a mask mandate. But it's become very, very emotional, hasn't it, as far as, you know, people back and forth with all this.
Yeah, it really has. And, you know, I have to say I really feel for all the parents out there. I mean, this has got to be an incredibly stressful time when your kids are trying to go back to school and you just want to keep them safe, but you don't want them to miss any school. So, you know, first of all, I understand that. And I think it's completely understandable that the parents would want to do everything they can to protect their children who can't be vaccinated at this point, the ones that are under 12. So I think, you know, absolutely masks are probably our best defense against COVID in that age group. It's one of many things, you know, including improving ventilation and social distancing and all of the things we're familiar with. But I have to say I'm somewhat baffled at the intensity of this debate when it's pretty clear that masks can protect kids and adults. And, you know, at this point, we really need to do something to keep our kids safe.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with Tanya Lewis. She's a senior editor at Scientific American. with a COVID update. And Tanya, we are so glad you've been able to join us for the last, 18 months to talk about COVID. You have written on it extensively, and as have many of the writers at Scientific American. I just want to mention that you and Josh Fishman, who is also a regular guest on Cool Science Radio, have come up with this sort of 60-second podcast updating on COVID. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. And I just want to say it's my pleasure. I always enjoy being on the show, and I wish we were under better circumstances. But and I just want to say thank you as well for mentioning our podcast, which is called COVID Quickly, and it's hosted on the 60 Second Science podcast stream, but it's actually not, it's longer than 60 seconds, but it's only about 5 minutes. And every 2 weeks we come to you with sort of a quick update on the latest big topics in COVID, and everything from vaccines to variants to masks and so much more. So thank you so much for the plug, and I hope you take a listen.
Oh, absolutely. I do, because I'm a fan of both you and Josh, and the information that you bring is very credible in its research. You know, Scientific American, the longest running magazine in the country, and I think second in the world. And so it's a great publication. Let's talk a little bit about this article that you wrote recently about how the pandemic has caused a baby bust, not a boom. And that's the title of the article. It's, again, as many things that we've thought about COVID didn't end up happening. In fact, the opposite happened. You know, like in Park City, we've had just this huge influx of visitors. It's busier than ever. We thought the opposite would happen. So talk about the baby bust.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly, I think a lot of people are inherently interested in. You know, to be clear, I think early on, a lot of the speculation about there being this baby boom during the pandemic came from sort of pundits and you know, maybe the media kind of speculating that people were stuck at home and, you know, what are you going to do, have a baby? But the reality is, like, many demographers would tell you that it's not actually a surprise that during a period like a pandemic or a financial recession, it's very common for birth rates to fall. And that has to do with a lot of things, but generally, you know, it relates to uncertainty, economic uncertainty. And in this case, I think a lot of families just were completely thrown by this new pandemic, and none of us really understood what it would mean. And so I think it's understandable that we're seeing these trends, but it's kind of interesting to sort of break it down and actually look at the actual birth rates and see that which countries saw the biggest declines. So if you look at Europe, for example, much of southern Europe, like Italy, Spain, Portugal, and also Hungary, saw these really big declines year over year, especially during the early part of the pandemic in last spring when the WHO first kind of acknowledge that this was a global crisis. So I think that's something we're going to have to follow for a number of years to see if there'll be kind of a rebound effect in births or whether this is going to have a long-term effect on the population.
Tanya, I've always been confused about when we enter the autumn of our year in North America. We're going to be indoors more. We won't be outdoors as much. And yet, I also hear that that the cold weather has a way of dampening infections. What's the real thing as it applies to autumn in North America?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think, you know, from the beginning, there was speculation about what effect the seasons would have on this virus. And what we know from data on other respiratory infections is that they do tend to peak during the winter season when weather's cold and that the air is drier and virus particles can live for longer in the air. So that's, you know, from what I've read, basically it would indicate that things would get worse generally the colder the weather is. That's why we have a flu season every year, you know, from fall through to winter. So my guess would be that, you know, if there's any effect, it would actually make things worse. But with this Delta variant, it's just been, you know, surprise after surprise, and we're already seeing such a big surge even before the fall weather. So it's hard to know exactly how things, but if anything, I do think that the cold weather could be, unfortunately, could make things worse.
Tanya, are you keeping your eye on the Nipah virus that came out of the state government of Kerala in India? Is that something you keep your eye on?
You know, there are often so many emerging viral outbreaks going on that it's probably impossible for me to kind of follow all of them. But, you know, that's not something I'm following closely. But if it does turn out to be a serious problem, I'm sure that we'll be hearing more and more about it.
Yeah, right now they're doing a pretty good job. They've closed down a couple square mile area after this one 12-year-old boy died on Sunday, and they're really trying to isolate this thing. But apparently, it's something. If they're not careful, it could take off.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a pretty serious virus, so it's not something that you want to cause an outbreak. So I think that's the right approach.
Well, this is interesting, Tanya, because what John brings up is something that, you know, he read in the news, and I'm wondering if now our level of paranoia is getting higher and higher, and we see a little mention of a new virus or a variant of the variant of COVID. And, you know, how, because you have studied these questions of new viruses all along, how do you think we have changed, you know, sort of as a human species because of the news about COVID, and how does it affect us when we, you know, hear first about the Delta variant and then a possible new variant?
Well, I think it definitely has made us all much more aware of infectious diseases in general. I mean, certainly speaking for myself, I think a lot more about, you know, sharing air with strangers, you know, on a train or in a restaurant, for example. And I wouldn't necessarily say that it's paranoia, because obviously, as we're seeing, you know, these outbreaks can turn into pandemics. Now, it's not true that every outbreak will become a pandemic, but certainly I think COVID has made us more aware of how these viruses spread, and sort of what steps we can take to protect ourselves, because there are well-known, tried and true steps, you know, things like wearing masks and vaccines. These are the ways that we've always, well, at least in recent years, we've been able to manage serious outbreaks. So I think it's a good thing. If any, maybe a silver lining to this whole pandemic is just making people more aware of how disease spreads, especially respiratory diseases, and what steps we can take to kind of protect ourselves, because we haven't seen the last pandemic, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, I'm wondering if you could talk us through, we talked a little bit about this in the beginning of the interview, about the new numbers on, you know, those areas that are largely unvaccinated versus the areas that are vaccinated in cases. But I'm curious about breakthrough cases. My 82-year-old, you know, fully vaccinated mother who lives in Montana, which is, you know, maybe you'd call it a hotbed of anti, you know, vaxxers. She has COVID currently, as does my stepfather. And, you know, luckily they're going to be okay, I think, because they got the vaccine. So it's, you know, it's a lesser sort of severity. But can you talk about our chances as fully vaccinated folks, depending on where we are, the chances of a breakthrough case?
Well, first of all, I'm very sorry to hear that your mother and stepfather are sick. I really hope they make a good recovery. And I think, as you said, the fact that they've been vaccinated is almost certainly going to protect them from getting very severely sick. So that's a great thing. I'm sure it's still no fun being, you know, in bed with flu-like symptoms and all of that. But certainly, when we talk about breakthrough infections, basically what we're talking about is people who've been vaccinated who still test positive or have symptoms for the virus. So they may not even be sick, you know, they may just test positive. But in some cases, you know, clearly some people do develop symptoms. But these symptoms, we've been seeing from study after study that these symptoms are much milder than you would have had if you were unvaccinated. And you're much less likely to be hospitalized or die from the virus. So when we talk about, I just wanted to clarify, you know, when we talk about breakthrough infections and the risk of getting COVID, we're talking about the risk of having any virus, you know, present in your body, in your nose, not necessarily the risk of becoming very sick. So that should hopefully give people some, make people feel a bit comforted, because we know that the risk of getting infected if you're vaccinated is already lower. It's not 100% effective, but it's good enough that most people will not get sick. And if they do, it's going to be a very mild or moderate case. It's not, it tends to not progress to this sort of very severe stage where you have to be hospitalized.
And that, of course, is encouraging. What is possibly discouraging, or maybe, you know, help me understand this, because I don't want to sound like I'm saying something sensational, but for the person that got the double vaccination from, say, Moderna or Pfizer, or the single from Johnson and Johnson, that goes into a social situation and they are infected with the virus, they show they're asymptomatic, they don't have the symptoms, and yet they're now potentially shedding that virus to people that may be unvaccinated. Is that something that we should be concerned about?
Well, so, you know, basically, early on, we kind of thought that maybe the vaccines would completely protect vaccinated people from transmitting the virus. And that was true for a time with the original variants of the virus. With the Delta variant, it does appear that vaccinated people can still transmit the virus, but the data that I've been seeing have suggested that they are infectious for a shorter amount of time and are, you know, less likely to transmit it. So you're certainly more protected against transmission from a vaccinated person than from a non-vaccinated person. So that's the first thing. Second of all, you know, I think if you do transmit, you know, that's one reason why we do need to kind of keep taking precautions, like wearing masks indoors, even if you're vaccinated, because there are still people around who cannot be vaccinated, like young children. And for those people, I think we do want to protect them as best as we can. And the best thing you can do to protect people is to get vaccinated, but the second best thing is to wear a mask and be careful until we have enough vaccinated people that the virus will kind of fizzle out and won't be able to spread as much.
And Tanya, you're a very curious person. What one question about COVID would you like to have answered that has not been answered yet?
Gosh, that's a tough one. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, I think, you know, the question that everyone wants to know is sort of how long will all of this last? And unfortunately, no one can really give an exact answer for that. What I can say is that most experts I've talked to or read about have said, you know, this isn't going to last forever. All pandemics do eventually end. A lot of them become so-called endemic viruses, where they just sort of circulate, like maybe like the flu, for example. But what the key is we really want to get to the point where most people are protected against severe infection, and death. And once we get to that point, I think we will be past the worst of this pandemic.
Tanya, could you talk to us a little bit about these new variants aside from Delta? There's Mu, there's Lambda. What do we know about these other variants?
Right. Well, I mean, certainly this is something that scientists are keeping a close eye on. I mean, there's always going to be new variants as long as this virus is in circulation. Unfortunately, every time someone is infected, there's a chance for the virus to mutate. What we do know that's encouraging is that of all the variants that have arisen so far, none of them seems to be able to completely evade the vaccines. So that's good news because it means, you know, we're not going to be completely unprotected if some new variant comes along. There is a concern that if enough, you know, if their variants continue to mutate, eventually you could get a variant that is better able to dodge the vaccines, but we're not at that point yet. And, you know, with all of these new variants, even with, you know, the Delta variant, even though it's much more transmissible than previous variants, the solutions to how to prevent spread are the same. I mean, vaccination, wearing, all of that doesn't change. I mean, it's basically the same virus. It's just mutated in a way more infectious. Oh. So it's scary, but it's also, we know how to manage these variants.
Right. Okay, we've just got a couple minutes left, and we haven't asked you yet about boosters. I've heard just in talking to, you know, friends around town, very different stories on who can get boosters and when.
That's a great question. I think there's been quite a lot of discussion around whether we call them boosters or just like a third dose of the vaccine. Many vaccines are given in three doses. For example, the hepatitis vaccine. So I think a lot of experts are saying that if you are immunocompromised or if you are living in a nursing home, you may just need a third dose of the vaccine to be fully protected. So you may not have ever gotten the level of protection that you need from two doses. What there's less agreement on at this point is whether healthy people, younger people, will need another dose. And that remains to be seen. We have seen that there have been these breakthrough infections, mild cases happening more frequently over time and with the Delta variant. But what we're not seeing is a spike in severe cases or deaths among people who've had both doses of the vaccine. So that's, you know, one encouraging thing that we may not need a booster yet. I think eventually it's possible we may need a booster shot if the virus mutates to the point where the vaccines are less effective. But at this point, the vast majority of people are well protected with two shots. If you do happen to fall into one of those high-risk groups, I think talk to your doctor, definitely. And for those individuals, it may be worth getting that third dose, not so much a booster, but just a third dose to make sure you're fully protected.
Tanya Lewis, senior editor at Scientific American. I'm trying to think, Lynn, how many times do you think Tanya's been with us? 5 or 6 times in the last 18 months?
Probably, yes.
Yeah, this has been really nice for us, and we really appreciate all the work that you do, doing diligence and trying to figure all this stuff out for us. We want to thank you for being on the program. We're probably going to call you back and bring you back at some point. But thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on the show with you, and I hope to be back with better news next time.
Okay, Tanya. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Tanya. Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.